I don't know what other language must I talk now. I've tried Afrikaans and English. May I say it in Swahili? Maybe people will understand. Let me just check, is our next presenter ready? But where are our previous presenters, because they must take questions now if there are any questions. Are we going to do credit ratings now? Yeah, this is a time, according to our program, it's a time for credit ratings now. But before that, I'll just have to check if there are questions, I mean, from the previous presentation.
Can I just say, you know, I've got probably 10 questions for the previous one, but I must allow myself to listen to credit ratings. But according to the program, 12:45, I must be out of this. So I don't want to be in a bad position, not be able to listen to credit ratings because we don't stick to the program. So can't we just have credit ratings, and then if there's general questions, as the program indicated, there will be in the end discussions. That's why we kept quiet, because we kept to the program and not asking questions during the presentation, because according to the program, it was stipulated to do it at the end. But I don't want to be disenfranchised not to listen to credit ratings.
Let me just make a determination if there are questions, and I will conclude. The program is, by the way, just a guiding tool. At the end of the day, the driver of the program must be taken, the directive from the driver must be taken serious, or else we might have a ship without a navigator. Honorable Harris, we wanted to raise a question on the previous presentation. Okay, so there are two, obviously there will be 11 questions. Okay, maybe I will take, just to accommodate Honorable Koranoff, I will accommodate your suggestion, because I know you have apologized earlier on that you'll be leaving at 12:45. And I will allow the next presentation to proceed. I hope, Roy, you guys will be around to take questions after the presentation. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's proceed to the next presentation. Are the copies issued?
Thank you very much, Chair. I do feel like a football coach or something. We're now rotating my team a little bit. So accompanying me is Mr. Roland Cooper. He is at the Financial Services Board. Previously, he was at Fitch, one of the big three ratings agencies, and I think he's a case of a poacher turned gamekeeper, so he understands the credit rating service industry very well, and he will be looking after the regulation of credit rating services for the Financial Services Board. So we thought we would do a joint presentation to explain the just credit rating services, I think, in a much more general way than we did before. And then, obviously, Chair, we can take questions as we go along.
Now, for a change now, because there is a special request that I've accommodated, we will take the whole presentation.
That's fine.
And I'm happy because I know credit rating is very specific. It's not having a lot of these technical aspects of the financial market. So we will take the presentation thereafter and entertain questions at the end of the presentation.
That's perfect.
That's for a change. Members, please note your questions.
That's perfect.
Even if they can be 50, please note them.
I'm just going to lay out the agenda, then I'll ask Roland to take us through the presentation. We're going to give you a background to CRAs and ratings. In particular, what is very important, as we discussed in the previous presentation, is that many of the things that we are introducing in the current cycle of legislation, and particularly in the legislation that is before the House this year, relates to our G20 commitments, and not only our G20 commitments, but also the need for us to align to European standards and to ensure that our investors are afforded the same level of protection as they would be in the European Union, but also to ensure that we can engage with the European Union in an appropriate way. It is very interesting what has been happening all the financial regulation, particularly I would say in the last year or two. When we first started going to G20 meetings on financial regulation just after the crisis, I think there was a feeling that all the countries were in this together and that we would bring out a coordinated response globally to everything. Unfortunately, what has crept in into the financial regulatory space is that countries are bringing in requirements and then are to some extent requiring that smaller countries meet their requirements. So we're seeing particularly in the United States and in the European Union, we are in many ways responding to their requirements to ensure that our capital markets are appropriate, are regulated in the same way as theirs. And I think that is quite good from the perspective of ensuring a global way of a globally coordinated response to the global financial crisis, but it also means that we have to bring in new regulations and requirements in South Africa and new builds. And then we will talk a bit about South African financial markets and then the elements of the bill and then the conclusion. I'm going to hand over to Roland, who will take us through most of the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to give a very broad background on the credit rating agencies, I've been asked during the interval to address who and what this is and you know, what is driving the regulation behind credit rating agencies. They were independent organizations and operations and have been until fairly recently. And they've existed since the 1900s, and originally they provided limited advice, and it was on railroad stock in the United States of America. And from that they evolved into the international institutions that we know and see today. They are recognized worldwide, there is no doubt about it. They play a very important role in the world markets, the financial markets. And it extends across a range of products, and those products have evolved over a period of time. There were one or two instances recently where they've had to change the way they do things. But if we go back to the commencement of what is known as the financial crisis, that's where it all happened for them, and that's where they picked up the most criticism. And we can perhaps just give you some statistics on that, and we can find some more statistics and send those to you if required. Essentially, they provide an opinion, and they claim and stick to it that it's an opinion only on an issuer's ability to meet its commitments and repay its debt, and that's what it's limited to. And that's done via a rating scale. And the rating scales are similar. They're not standardized across the rating industry. They're entitled to use their own rating scale, and it's up to the investors and the users of those ratings to understand them. The rating types we have in South Africa, and this is where it all starts. By invitation, the rating agency would come in and rate the sovereign first. That's what is required. That's the starting point. And your second point is your banking industry, before anything else. And then we roll out all the other products as you go along. And banks, insurance, corporate, public finance ratings, fund managers, project finance have been stable over the years. I don't think that there's any criticism against those. But the last point, the structured finance, is where the trouble started for them. And you can read quite extensively from books written and authored by people who were right inside the engine rooms of the institutions affected by these, or from those sitting on the outside as regulators and politicians who wanted to tighten up things as to how they saw things go wrong. But essentially in the structured finance market, it was perceived that there was too close a relationship between the issuers and the rating agencies. And in many instances, the rating agencies had been accused of towing the line for the issuers and the people who had paid for the ratings. And at the height of the financial crisis,
there were up to 85% of these structured finance transactions that had their ratings changed negatively, downgraded. These led to huge losses being incurred in the markets. And those losses to date run into the trillions of dollars. The statistics that people have published about the wealth that was lost to the world via these transactions are astronomical figures when one looks at them. But nonetheless, passing by that, one would always need to have a look at what happened and what went wrong. And safe to say, in the structured finance arena, the criteria, the methodology has had to be revisited. And one must remember that the crisis was driven by what is known as subprime mortgage lending. And it's not, as we know it, as prime rate lending. It means creditworthy-wise, the people that had taken out these mortgages were subprime. They weren't able to raise finance through normal channels, neither did they qualify through normal credit channels. So this subprime mortgage arena sprung up, and from the mortgage houses which additionally dealt with them, and they weren't the banks, they transformed individual mortgage loans into mortgage bonds, which went into the market, which were purchased by banks and other investors who had relied on the ratings assigned to them. It was a massive market. It grew exponentially over a period of time, and in that period of time, the rating agencies were on a learning curve and were coping adequately with the ratings they were providing until things went wrong. Let me just add that no one, I think, has the answer yet as to what actually went wrong, but there were a number of elements. First of all, the ratings were incorrect, clearly. And secondly, there was human behavior involved in some of the subprime stuff. People blatantly committed fraud. So if you look at the sovereign banks, insurance, corporate, public finance, fund managers, and project finance, that is adequate. And I don't think you can level any criticism at the rating agencies for that. It's been consistent. And I think that, as I may call it, has been their bread and butter over the years. Where they made a lot of money was out of structured finance, and it went horribly wrong for them. And it affected the world, financial markets worldwide. It had a massive, massive impact, still has a massive impact. In South Africa, we can safely say that on the structured finance market, we haven't had any of those disasters. And the structured finance market has been well managed, well treated in the country. And it goes beyond just the regulation of credit rating agencies. It extends into the regulations of the central bank, of how they saw securitizations needed to be managed and regulated. And then, of course, the management within the banks. And then the market, of course, was so much smaller and manageable by the local banks as compared to the international banks. Why do we need these credit rating agencies? It's not simply a case of saying somebody's got to do it. I think they have a vested interest in what they do. They have a massive infrastructure set up, a massive research operation, and they're able to make a comparison of a country against its peer groups, or a business against its peer groups, or an institution against its peer groups worldwide. One of the nice things about an international rating is that it's valid worldwide. If South Africa or an entity in South Africa has an international rating from Moody's, it is valid as it is in Singapore, as it is in New York, as it is in Sao Paulo. It's a rating, and that's the international rating. It doesn't change where it's utilized. South Africa needs multiple sources of funding for the banks, the corporates, and the foreign sources of finance are going to be important. And those foreign investors or provider funds will drive the process. And in that process, we can expect to see a lot more ratings coming out. So as opposed to not encouraging people to use these ratings, I think in the emerging market space, investors are going to utilize rating agencies and other institutions to provide opinions to them. One of the big drivers of this
regulation, and it's a requirement in Europe, is that in order for South African credit rating agencies providing ratings into Europe, that they have an equivalence rating, or sorry, regulatory regime, in order for the European banks, investors, etc., to be able to utilize their ratings. And the European Securities Authority had recognized the global nature of credit ratings in a previous presentation. We showed you the slide where an international rating agency may have a bank rating team based in Cyprus, and they're responsible for rating the banks in South Africa and many other countries. And it was the requirement was to bring everybody into the net in order to make these ratings valid in the eyes of the authorities. One of the things that they recognized in this is what we just mentioned, is the cross-border activities of credit rating agencies, that they're not strictly domiciled to the countries where they rate, that their expertise lies in individual countries, and they utilize those skills across borders. And one of the requirements of this regulatory environment is that we recognize that and that we work with them and that we provide the ability to regulate on behalf of, for example, Europe. And they require a memorandum of understanding. We'll go through this fairly quickly. I've spelled out exactly what the MOU requires. It's cooperative. It supervises cross-border credit rating agencies and allows for cooperation on that basis. And it ensures compliance with an equivalent regime of regulations, which gives satisfaction to the countries utilizing those ratings. For example, that South Africa's regulations are at least equivalent to the requirements in Europe. Now, there are some requirements there of what the notifications are when the cross-border credit rating agency makes application, that you need to give feedback to the central authority, who will advise all the other members to the MOU. And then, of course, you agree to cooperate with each other if things are going wrong or if certain information is required or the enforcement of supervisory responsibilities is required. Also, there's a requirement that you notify the central authority, who will notify all the members to the MOU, that action is being taken against a cross-border credit rating agency. The information is not limited. It includes but not limited to exchanging information and documents, obtaining documents, and then, you know, all the enforcement requirements we have in South Africa, compelling a person's statement or testimony under oath, conducting on-site inspections to gather information. Now, if you read this, it sounds very negative and very aggressive. And you know, why rely on this? Isn't there a brighter side to the way the credit rating agencies need to be regulated? In our view and in our discussions, we have noted that the international rating agencies operating here already comply with these requirements in Europe, and have already structured themselves to comply with that in terms of making the necessary adjustments in the way they do business and the way they publish the ratings. What is required and is important is that South Africa have the equivalent regulations, and those rating agencies operating in South Africa are able to show that they are regulated equivalently. The result of this is a positive side, I believe, in that credit ratings issued in South Africa are recognized in Europe, and one could also add worldwide, continue to be recognized worldwide. South Africa continues to have access to regulated international capital markets, and South Africa maintains its international position, for example, in IOSCO. And a lot of these requirements are driven by G20 through IOSCO and into other organizations, for example, like ESMA. We have got representatives from ASISA here, and they could add to this, I'm sure, but in the South African domestic market,
South Africa is an A-field player, if I could put it that way. It's like going onto the A-field. It's like going to the game and saying, I want to play. And one of the things you need to recognize there is that the A-field rules apply. Fortunately, in South Africa, we've always had a very active, sophisticated, and world-class local market, debt capital market. And you need to know that there are trillions of rands under management. And these are the funds of people who have saved and invested, largely making provision for their retirement. In that role, up until now, the local and the international credit rating agencies have provided ratings where they were required for regulatory purposes and for other purposes. And this market will continue to require the role of these rating agencies. And why do we say that? We say we want to encourage competition and extend the market to new players. The PIC appoints fund managers on their behalf and allocates funds for management. I'm not suggesting that what I'm going to give in as example now could happen, but certainly if some very bright young individuals decide to get together and to start running a fund management operation, it's pretty expensive to build up the credit and risk teams, which they should have. But they may well want to start with something small and palatable and manageable. And therefore, in the last point that I've made, they can choose to rely on the credit ratings issued. Whilst worldwide people are saying we must discourage the reliance on credit ratings issued by these monsters, the local market in South Africa can choose to rely on these. After all, they do have the expertise, they have the world expertise at their fingertips. And if anyone chooses that, there should be equivalent regulations to put us on the A field in terms of how we manage this. Just quickly run through the point on the international debt raising. South Africa is going to be very strong in the years going forward, and that's really where our interest will be. How do we, as a country and as certain institutions in the country, raise the funding requirements we have for the infrastructure cost and build programs that are tabled at the moment? The domestic market, you will know, is too small. It's just not possible to raise the funding locally. We will continue to need access to the foreign debt capital markets, and together with that, I believe we will see the role of the credit rating agencies being driven by investors. Investors will drive this and they will say, oh, here's a bond issue coming out of Eskom. Get an XYZ rating, and while you're about it, get an ABC rating as well. And currently you have a requirement for at least two ratings. We might even see that three ratings would have to be made as well. So there's no getting away from it. These agencies are yet to stay, and they will be vital in South Africa's funding requirements going forward. I've just given you an example. It's the sovereign. I think Roy gave you an estimate earlier on of what the annual requirement is. It's all rated. It's all rated. And then, of course, Eskom on its massive build program, Transnet, that's recently come to the market, and others will follow as we go forward. In the bill, what is being addressed is measures to address the conflicts of interest which existed in the structured finance ratings market previously. There's an enhancement to the quality of the credit ratings required, including the publication of the credit ratings. Give us more information. If I said to you out there, Siaka Series 1 note was rated AAA, you're going to ask me, what is Siaka? Well, it's a residential mortgage bond program. Go a step further, it's based on affordable housing. I think you need to start disclosing, and the disclosure needs to be more complete rather than just
repeating a name of it, of the vehicle issuing those notes. Transparency and internal governance is a requirement that has been enhanced. We've seen it in the responses we're getting out of ESMA and out of IOSCA. And then the surveillance over the credit rating agencies. And I want to highlight one point before I close off, and I think this is very, very important. Whilst we will have regulations and whilst we will have an active role in the way these ratings are produced, no person, including the registrar, may hinder, interfere with, obstruct, or improperly attempt to influence a credit rating. The content of the credit rating or any methodology, model, or key assumption used by a registered credit rating agency to derive a credit rating. So it's business as usual for them. And they're welcome to enhance, improve their methodologies. One of the measures that we've not adopted, or not suggested even that we will adopt, is that we need to approve the methodology changes as are made by the credit rating agencies. We don't see that is possible at the moment. And the independence of the credit rating agencies is enhanced in that. The conclusion from this is that the bill ensures South Africa has regulations in place, an international requirement, no getting away from it. The bill adds to the credibility of ratings issued in the country, not simply because of the regulations, but the rating agencies operating here are regulated internationally. We remain part of the European and international environment, and we need to be aware that this is going continuous update. Whilst we still are working towards having our bill implemented, the Europeans are on draft 3, version 3 of implementation of this. It's racing ahead in terms of what they want to get done. And then, of course, South Africa has continued access to international markets, and that's vital. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cooper, on behalf of the FSB. Honourable members, I'm not sure. I think this concludes your submission, FSB, because maybe you must also accord other members an opportunity to say a word or two if there is something that they want to add. But also, what is going to happen? Please, we will ensure that as you respond, you also allow members of your team to where it's necessary. You know, I'm not saying I'm complaining because they are here now. They are not saying anything. No, but I'm just saying where it's necessary. They can respond or call, shed some light from where they sit. I don't think there's a problem in that. Members, that was the presentation on the credit ratings services bill. Let's have your questions. I have noted, initially I think I have noted Honorable Gordon Wolf and Honorable Harris. We can start where we ended in our first presentation, and members will just indicate, I mean, as to where are the questions directed. Thank you.
Shoot. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I would like to have a specific example. I know the insurance industry is very much in favor of this legislation. Now, I want to know why are they in particular in favor of this? And give us an example. You know, give me an example. I want to understand it. I understand, you know, what you have dealt with here. And I know there is probably a need for regulation. I think Europe will take another year if they're on draft 3. But we will be through with this before them, I'm sure of that. But why do you need to change the current regime? Apart from what you were saying and apart from getting in sync with the rest of the world, why is the insurance industry so concerned if we don't have this?
Honorable Harris, you just note the question. I thought you said you had 10 questions, if I heard it correctly.
No. I've said I could have asked easily 10 questions, but because of the time constraint, you know, I will not do it. I will do it when we in at the committee level then.
Well, thanks for being considerate. But I hope that doesn't deny you an opportunity to comprehend this. Okay. All right, Honourable Harris.
Chair, I find it impossible to hop between the bills, so I'm going to ask on credit ratings. My head is in this bill now. Later I'll have to ask on the financial markets, perhaps at the end. The only justification that I can think of that actually matters is the equivalence requirements with the EU pension funds investing in SA debt instruments. I can see there is a requirement to do this, but I do have questions around whether the approach we've taken is appropriate. The first one is one I've actually asked before about the conflict of interest of Treasury, which issues debt, drafting a law that regulates credit ratings of that debt. And the Treasury gave the answer last time, I believe, that they've given the drafting to the FSB, or some of the drafting, or most of the drafting. Can you just clarify exactly that explanation there? Because I'm still quite uncomfortable with Treasury being player and referee. The Treasury's heard all my issues before, but let me go through them and try and get a more clear answer. The definition of external rating agencies, I think we've set out on a very complex way of establishing external rating agencies, and I am strongly convinced by the argument that the U.S. system, where you simply append a list of external structures related to that agency, and those are the external agencies that are covered. I think right now we actually do open up, as the agencies have said, the prospect of double regulation, and the onerous requirement of the FSB having to endorse every rating coming into the country if we don't establish that equivalence. Thirdly, from the very beginning, I've had a concern about the fact that it would be relatively easy for the large rating agencies to comply with this bill, but I'm not sure if we're comfortable with that number of rating agencies. Shouldn't we be writing a law that makes it relatively easy for new entrants to compete, and does this bill achieve that? I'm not sure that startup rating agencies, for example, would be able to comply to the same extent, and aren't we therefore just accepting a relatively uncompetitive space, perhaps? Then, Chair, we have a legal opinion from our parliamentary legal advisor around the definition of this act in the definitions, and I think it's a very sound opinion to me. It suggests that we do limit that definition. I haven't in any other law seen such a broad definition of this act, and I would be interested in Treasury's response to my efforts to, in line with the legal advisor's opinion, change that in the legislative process. What would you say if we did limit that definition? And have you read the legal opinion? Chair, my understanding is that the liability in this bill goes much further than other bills and other models around the world, where essentially a breach is criminalised. Surely this is far too harsh a sanction. Can't we limit that to specifically things like wrongful intent, fraud or gross negligence? I mean, we are dealing with a relatively free market here. Issuers pay for the ratings and they're free to choose another agency if they don't like it to do. Isn't criminalisation too harsh? And then we all know the questions around the plain language requirements. It seems slightly redundant seeing as credit ratings are written for a technically minded audience, and although the law does specify that it needs to be plain language for the audience for which it's intended, it just seems redundant to me. And then lastly, the comment made about the EU racing ahead. I'm not sure if that was intended to try and focus the committee's mind on getting this bill passed, but I think it's entirely appropriate that the EU does race ahead. I mean, we're very small markets, and we need to make sure that however we legislate, we have a very clear idea of what the larger markets have done first. So, yeah, I'd just like some clarity around that statement and the motivation of it. Thank you.
You know, as you mentioned this aspect on criminalization, you reminded me of a country where defrauding and corruption is punishable by death. Okay, Honorable Mteto.
Thanks, Chair. Is this credit rating also taking into consideration new players, or we're still recycling the old one on the system?
Okay, I think you are recollecting the question that was asked earlier on the prospects of the bill, the prospect of encouraging new entrants to the market. Very loaded question, because I know there is a tight market for penetration. The requirements are just too high. But I'm leaving that to you to respond. But at the same time, let me just check if there are further questions. Honorable Harris, you are free to pose the questions on the first bill. Not unless you want us to exhaust this first, and you'll come to those questions later.
If you don't mind, Chair. Sorry, I haven't thought about that now for at least half an hour. Let me think about it again, and then I'll follow up with questions on that.
I thought you were ready. Okay, no, it's fine. It's okay. Mr. Cooper and your team, you can now respond to some of the issues raised. Empower us.
Thank you, Chair. There's a number of questions there, and as this is a workshop, we will encourage some of the very capable colleagues that are with me here today. Just the first point from Europe in place, why change the current regime? I think, you know, you could go to a point where, you know, if it's not broken, why do you want to fix it? But this is broken, you know, and this is something that has to be addressed, and it comes back to, you know, if you want to play in international markets, these are their requirements, and it also requires that you have regulations in place. I don't know what the alternatives are if you don't have regulations in place. There are probably one or two countries that are not contemplating them at the moment. But I think South Africa has recognized that we have been part of that international market, and there's no reason not to continue. And the equivalence requirement is the biggest driver that we have behind it. But still, one must also recognize that the credit rating agencies were explicitly exempt from any liability or responsibility, and they answered to no one, only to themselves. And I could share with you what it's like when you don't answer to anyone. And I remember a previous regulator of the banks phoning and saying, you know, I want to see you now. And you know, you can then say, but I don't answer to anyone. You know, and that's there is a requirement for regulations, and there is a requirement for fairness and in fairness in the treatment of the credit rating agencies. My colleagues and I have discussed it at length. You do state that you offer an opinion, but the opinion is relied upon. The opinion where they've been incorrect have caused major losses. The opinion is paid for. And the opinion, people as investors can choose not to rely on it or to rely on it. And if you rely on it, you can keep it. That's all I want to say on that, and the regulation requirement is certainly, if not looking only in South Africa, but a worldwide phenomenon. It's probably overdue. It's just clarifying the rules rather than being vindictive against these people. It was mentioned to us that, is this not a response from government because of the negative reviews they've been receiving from the credit rating agencies? Not at all. Not at all. It's an international requirement, and we're abiding by that.
Chair, I think I'll respond to the questions directed to the Treasury, and then I'll hand back to the FSB. In terms of conflict of interest, Treasury being both player and referee in the process of drafting this bill, that is quite correct. We have not tried to impose our will in terms of the drafting of the bill. It is we have been very mindful of the potential for a conflict, and we've tried to manage it as far as possible. And I think Roland referred to Section 20 of the bill, which says any person, including the registrar, but that it obviously extends to the Treasury and to the government generally, cannot interfere with the independence of the credit rating agencies. And I think that's a very important principle. So I think it's a very good question, and we have tried as far as possible to manage any potential conflicts of interest. There is, of course, the procedural question, Chair, which is that only the Minister of Finance can introduce the bill into Parliament, so it is just one of those things which can be done. On the definition of credit rating agency, I think many of these questions raised by Honourable Harris actually refer to, are probably more appropriately dealt with in our response next week, where we have responded to many of the commentators and we have taken on board many of these issues, but I can quickly respond to them now if that will be helpful. And just hopefully, I don't want to give away our song and dance act next week, but it might be helpful to go through it quickly now. Definition of external credit rating agency. We have picked up from a lot of the commentators, and we had quite a lot of engagement with particularly one of them, that there was a little bit of a misunderstanding in terms of the role of external credit rating agency and how it functions within the bill. The intention, I think it was interesting because two sets of comments emerged. As was highlighted, the insurance industry is very excited by this bill, and I think it's a very good step for us to take. I'll ask the why question. They are here, but credit ratings, Chair, and I think that goes to fast forward quickly to the point that was made about liability, and that because issuers pay for the ratings, the perception is that means issuers can change credit rating agencies if they don't like the credit rating agency. That's very important to highlight. It doesn't say that the people that use the credit rating, which are the investors, the insurance companies, the pension companies, etc., they actually have very little control over the issuance and the choice of credit rating agency. One of the commentators suggested that we should allow the users of the credit ratings more power in terms of which credit rating agency is chosen. I think that is an interesting and quite a good proposal. The problem is it's not workable in the context of our EU requirements. So we have not included that. But I think the issuer pays model creates a lot of problems in the sense that, in actual fact, it is the issuer of debt that pays for the rating, not the user of the rating. And so that leads to a lot of the need for the regulation, the fact why we do actually have to have a relatively tight system of regulation, because in actual fact the market cannot punish rating agencies that don't do it appropriately. That said, just as an aside, it was very interesting when the United States was downgraded from AAA, that bond yields, which are a market measure of the ability of an issuer to repay, actually improved, suggesting that the market didn't take the credit ratings agencies as seriously as they should be taken, or so it suggests that the market is also working towards making them less important. I don't know if Roland, you want to add anything on the issuer pays or the insurance, if you've got anything on.
One of the big arguments has always been that the issuer pays, therefore there could be a conflict of interest. There is an alternative investor pays, but I think it's a model that needs to be addressed by the market more than a regulator. But I do know it's been suggested often to investors that, you know, why don't we change it to investor pays? I think they could give you a number of reasons why not. So as it is, that model's not being interfered with. Do you want me to address it?
Sorry. Let me finish the other questions. Then, to go to the definition of external credit rating agencies, as I said, there's been a bit of confusion about what exactly we meant. So we have tightened up the wording a little bit, and we've tightened up some of the definitions in response to those comments and in response to the comments which were raised during the hearings, and we will bring those to the committee next week. And hopefully that will go a long way to allaying the concerns, if there are any. And that also then applies to the endorsement criteria, which I think the intention was misread in terms of what we wanted endorsement to do, and so we've tried to improve the wording there so that the intention is clear. Relatively easy for new entrants to compete or startups to comply. Quite the opposite. I think some of the commentators from the smaller ratings agencies actually welcome the bill because, as I said before, you may not have heard, but we actually have 5 credit rating agencies in South Africa, but everybody only knows the big 3. And the implication of that is that these guys that operate small credit rating agencies have no way of proving to the market that they have appropriate methodologies and tools. So what that creates is a sort of a regulatory gap, and if they can meet the standards required by them, then they should be able to operate in the country. And Roland, if you want to add to anything on that.
Just to add to that, and one of the abilities, or one of the acts, clauses states that the registrar can give exemption under registration. So there is it can encourage a smaller or a startup credit rating agency to come into the market by allowing some exemptions, either for permanently or for a time frame or whatever. But without wanting to contradict Roy too much, I think you won't see the startups in South Africa become big international credit rating agencies. They'll remain as South African credit rating agencies. It's a massive undertaking to become an international player, and hence the regulation requirement for someone that has such a dominant position in the market.
Okay, then on the This Act definition, yes, I think Advocate Jenkins wrote a very useful opinion, and we have engaged with him quite extensively, including yesterday, and in the new draft that the definition is slightly narrower. It's a little bit of an inconsistency between definitions in the different financial services legislation, so we are working towards aligning all the definitions. Liability in terms of criminalization, in actual fact, the latest version, which we proposed last time, takes away criminalization, so there's certainly no criminalization of liability. I think that was also a misunderstanding. I know there was some press around that too, which is also a misunderstanding, but that has been tightened up also. The plain language requirement, I think this is actually a very important requirement. We had quite a lot of comments on this, and we will respond to them in more detail next week, but it is important that as far as possible, people that are using the ratings understand the ratings. It is very easy for credit rating agencies to write things in what I would call financial markets babble. In actual fact, I read some research reports that on particular shares, or for example, that it's almost impossible for anybody to understand what they're trying to say. So there should be some sort of plain language requirement, and this is also, I think, internationally consistent. And then I think I'll leave Roland to answer on EU racing ahead issues and where we are relative to the rest of the world.
Yes, we are mindful of what they're doing in the European community, and of course in other big markets and major players as well. When I said that they're racing ahead, they had their bill adopted in 2010. Then they're currently on revision. Well, the first revision was changing it from the European authority to the established authority, which was ESMA. They had CRA2 and they had some feedback on that. But currently they're with CRA3, which proposes analyst rotation. There's liability, and it's quite an onerous liability clause that they're proposing there as well. The impression one would get if you stayed with this is they are determined to continue regulating and to tighten up on the regulations for rating agencies. And one of the other things that they have introduced is, for example, notification of a sovereign downgrade or any change in a sovereign rating. There's a notice period now required. And so we will be able to adopt, in terms of equivalence under the current legislation they have in place. What I might have been wanting to say is that as we go forward, we may well have to start making amendments to remain equivalent. But currently as we are, and we've checked it together, Shamila and Rita and myself and Norman, that we're confident that we are on the equivalent, based on the questionnaire that we've responded to for ESMA.
I think that concludes all the questions. I think the new players question, I think we dealt with it, it was related to another question. But there is always in financial regulation a balance between allowing new players in and regulating them. The Banks Act, for example, has a very onerous requirement to allow someone to even call themselves a bank or to operate the business of a bank. And that's very important. I mean, you don't want anybody to open up a bank because they could just steal money. So you do have to balance, I think, the need for regulation with the need to allow good new players into the system.
Any reinforcement from the team? I'm worried we have only been listening to one frequency. Thanks for coming to our rescue.
Thank you very much. Just a couple quick comments on the definition of this act, as has been stated. We will be proposing some revisions to that definition in line with consultations with the parliamentary legal advisers. So we believe that there will be an acceptable amendment that will be proposed in this session next week. And in response to the query about the criminalization of offenses, we will also be proposing some slight tightening of the wording in the offenses and penalties provision, which we also hope will address some of the concerns that have been raised in the comments relating to the offenses and penalties provision. Thank you.
All right. I know this area was thoroughly clarified in our last session. They're working together between your team and the legal, and of course, because I was just not sure when are we going to get the response. I mean, as a way of preparing ourselves for the session for the 8th, can we get that response a bit earlier as a committee, so as we can start looking into and dissect it as we prepare for the session for the 8th?
Yes, Chair, the responses for both bills, the Financial Markets Bill and the Clearing Services Bill, are finished. We can provide it to the committee, I think, during the course of tomorrow when we get back to Pretoria. I think hopefully that will give enough time for the committee to work through it. They're both quite complex bills, but we can provide that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. That will be highly appreciated. Thank you, Janine, for adding a different frequency. Honorable Chabalala, I saw your hand also.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to find out, and I know you've answered it around the methodology, but just to say that, you know, credit agencies, they use different methodologies to come up with their own ratings. Most of the time, it remains a secret. Hence, that's how they also make profit out of that. This simply means that the methodologies are not standardized, so there is no uniformity to any whatsoever. So my concern around that, as a country, or rather the government, how do we trust and give the recognition to a particular rating than the other? Not that it is our competency, but as much as we are regulating, so that at the end of the day we give confidence to the public, or rather the people that definitely pay attention to what the ratings say, and they do damage to their own people, be it a company and so forth and so on, that is subscribing to a certain company, when even when that happens. So when do we draw the line, and how do we strike a balance there? And on page 5 of the document, I think you're speaking about providing information that they've got responsibility to provide further information. You were saying that, you know, if it's a company, they should also give more information around, you know, the probably the integrities, how did they come to a credit rating. But I want to find out, you know, how do we ensure that happens? What type of information are we saying, or we're not going to write it in the bill, we're just going to say to them, you must give more information? Would it be on the people that are concerned? Is it therefore legal for them to write to them to say, I want more information before I can take what your rating has said, or rather take to confidence? So what type of information, how are we going to strike a balance around that also? And I mean, the reality is that these credit rate agencies, they make, you know, they've got monopoly of information, if I may say so. So they do really make profit out of it. So that is my two concerns. Thanks.
All right. I hope you have captured everything. Any other question from members? Honorable Harris?
I can ask on the financial markets bill.
Yeah, what?
I understand that the purpose of the workshop is to get a general briefing of the bills in the context of what's going on in the rest of the world and what we're up to in South Africa. So I'll keep it at general, Chair, but my understanding is that the Treasury is committed to transitioning to a Twin Peaks model. And I have a problem or a question around the sequencing of this bill in that context. Aren't we putting the cart before the horse? Shouldn't we go to Twin Peaks all at once or first before we do a bill like this? Then a related question, which specifically speaks to the SRO model and the Treasury's commitment to review it. Is that review still underway? And if so, shouldn't we finish it before we legislate with major implications for the SROs? And then lastly, under the Twin Peaks, the FSB is meant to do market conduct. This bill isn't market conduct. How does these new responsibilities for the FSB fit into the anticipated Twin Peaks division of responsibility? Because to my mind, it gives FSB much more than that. And I guess that speaks to my first question about the sequencing.
Could you please repeat your last question?
My last question is that under Twin Peaks, the idea, I think, is that the FSB handles market conduct, and the financial markets bill goes further than market conduct, isn't market conduct. Doesn't it broaden the responsibilities of the FSB beyond what they're intended to do under Twin Peaks? Or am I misunderstanding it? Then, under the model proposed in the financial markets bill, wouldn't the JSC which has a commercial function as a listed entity itself, but then also regulatory functions. Isn't there a conflict of interest there, because they would effectively regulate themselves? And then I understand the idea of clearing is going to be in the regulations rather than the legislation. I generally have a problem with that. I'd prefer it if the law, which is subject to this committee's review, covered an area as critical as that, particularly when it comes to the question of equivalence and the fact that we have probably too small a market to justify our own clearing operation. And then lastly, Chair, I probably missed it, but on the second to last slide of the presentation, there's a explanation that the minister, a new power for the minister is to approve changes in control. Can I just find out exactly what that means? Does it effectively give the minister a potential veto over changes in shareholdings? And doesn't that doesn't that go a little bit too far? I need to understand exactly what's intended there, because I have alarm bells when I see it here. That's it, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Any other questions from members? So this is the last round of questions. Not unless some questions will be obviously be agitated by the response. Let's go to the response then.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry, I might not have got your full query, so please stop me if I'm not addressing it correctly. But what I did hear was you mentioned that there seemed to be a lack of uniformity and conformity in the way the credit rating agencies operate. Is that correct? And then where do we draw the line on relying on these? How far can we go on relying on the ratings? And then what are the additional information requirements to enhance the information that is published? Is that correct? Right, let me answer that question. I think the credit rating agencies would be loath to say that they have an established methodology which is industry-wide and needs to be conformed with, throughout the industry. They set their own methodologies and they set their own criteria. And yes, they are very similar. These are published on the websites and they're available to the public in general. But largely the investor community, what they do is they take the criteria and the methodology and they run models themselves and they make comparisons. It is well known in the industry that, particularly in the structured finance industry, certain methodologies gave better ratings than those used by other rating agencies. I think what we have now, we don't have it in South Africa, but what have you in the international market is you are required to open a portal and all the information must be made available on that portal, and any rating agency can access it and provide a comment or a rating on it if so required. We haven't got that requirement in South Africa at the moment, but there is a discretion with the registrar, and also we have made it clear that if a credit rating agency lacks information or feels that it's unable to provide a rating, that they must not then provide a rating. But still, you will always have these methodologies differing in small respects, not in big respects. They are required to review the methodologies and the criteria at least annually and to publish changes or notification that they have been reviewed without changes. Reliance. And I don't know how to answer that, because the feeling in South Africa and the general feeling worldwide is that we want to discourage reliance on credit ratings. I believe that you're entitled to do that, but I also believe that conversely that you can encourage reliance on them. So that the investors will determine themselves. It's not something that the regulatory authority would determine. And then your last point, publication of information. Yes, there's been big improvement in that. And it goes under the general heading of integrity of the ratings. It's how you publish them, what information you provide, and the information additional to that, like what did you see, what didn't you see, what information was made available to you, what information was not available to you as a credit rating agency. It differentiates between solicited or paid for ratings and unsolicited ratings. If you publish an unsolicited rating, you need to also state what information you had and what you relied on. So there have been huge improvements and enhancements to the information requirements. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I'll respond to most of the financial markets for once, but I rely quite heavily on Cathy, so I might refer to her or to some of the other people. In terms of the general comment about Twin Peaks process, this is a question that we ourselves have thought quite heavily about, not only in the context of Twin Peaks, but in the context of many other things that are going on at the same time. So on this slide, in the beginning of the presentation, I tried to set out the sequencing of legislation that we're looking at, the Credit Rating Services Bill is a G20 requirement. A Financial Markets Bill deals only specifically with G20 requirements that we are required to do this year and before next year. So they are the G20 requirement, particularly, for example, on OTC derivatives, the creation of a trade repository, central clearing, all those things, that actually needs to be in place by the end of this year, by the end of 2012, under the G20 requirements. And if read together with the Basel requirements, which are coming out quite soon, our banks pretty much have to be able to clear centrally and report to a trade repository by the end of the year for them to continue to operate as they have before. So many of the things in the Financial Markets Bill are, I would say, relatively urgent things that need to come in right now. In addition, as Kathy highlighted in her part of the presentation, this is the end of a three-year review of the Security Services Act. So there are a lot of changes that really respond to the review of the Security Services Act. We did consider delaying the Financial Markets Bill until Twin Peaks. There are advantages and disadvantages. The advantages is that we do everything together. The disadvantages is that we would bring you a 1,000, 2,000 page bill, it would be an extensive piece of legislation. So what we've decided to do is rather to stagger it over the course of 2 or 3 years. The Twin Peaks Architecture Bill will probably be coming to this committee during the course of early next year, which will establish the two regulators and shift prudential regulation to the Reserve Bank. And then in 2013-14, probably as far as possible together with the Twin Peaks Architecture Bill, we will update the legislation as and when required. In actual fact, the legislation itself doesn't need to be rewritten. It merely needs to divide up the responsibilities between the two regulators more appropriately. We have spent quite a lot of time understanding the Australian experience of Twin Peaks, and their insurance law, for example, is very interesting because we do the same with ours, where they actually take a piece of legislation and divide up the, I don't want to use the word demarcate because it has connotations, but divide up the responsibilities for different sections of the regulation to different regulators. And that's a very elegant way of doing it, and it's very important because it means that all the insurance legislation is in one place. So I don't think that the Twin Peaks is going to create a brand new Financial Markets Bill. In actual fact, quite the opposite. I think it's going to create a few simple changes to the Financial Markets Bill, but we can't do that until we have actually established the Twin Peaks. So we sort of have to sequence it that way around. We have to start with Twin Peaks and then gradually shift things across. We also don't want to create regulatory uncertainty or create sudden changes. Then on the SRO model, in terms of our commitment, as I explained at the beginning, we have Jonathan Katya. He used to be the Secretary of the Securities and Exchange Commission in the US, and he will be beginning the process of engaging with all the stakeholders on the SRO model. We have had extensive, I think I'm not going to go into the SRO model again, Chair. I think we have hopefully exhausted that topic. In terms of the FSB's market conduct role, this is much more than market conduct. Absolutely quite correct. This is a combination of systemic requirements. So there are areas of systemic regulation, there are prudential requirements, and there are market conduct requirements, all laid out together. And that just reflects where we are at the moment. So when the FSB is transformed into a market conduct regulator, it will assume responsibilities for the market conduct components of securities regulation. And in actual fact, there's quite a lot of market conduct in securities regulation. The buying and selling of shares is a market conduct issue. Market abuse, insider trading, manipulation of shares, those are all market conduct things. And in actual fact, in the Australian case, securities regulation is primarily undertaken by the market conduct regulator. We have already completed a study on how we will, some of the options that we have available to us. And again, more JSC commercial regulatory functions. We have introduced new conflicts of interest sections in the response document, and we will explain that next week, some of the new additional safeguards about that. In terms of clearing in regulation, Kathy, sorry, not. We do have an extensive clearing section which deals with the clearing requirements of the clearinghouse. Just to distinguish between what the clearinghouse will, what the legislation will establish and what the regulations will establish. The legislation establishes the clearinghouse. There's an entire chapter setting out the principles of the clearinghouse and how it works and what it should do. And that's quite extensive and gory, and I think is covers hopefully all the issues that the legislature would be concerned about. The use of the clearinghouse and how that is, the function of the clearinghouse is, I think, something that's more appropriate for regulation, because it is something that is quite a dynamic area of work. This bill has taken us 2 to 3 years and has already taken us 8 months in Parliament itself. So you do want a little bit more flexibility than that in respect of certain issues around clearing. But there is an extensive chapter on clearing and the clearinghouse specifically. So I think hopefully that covers that concern. I don't know if Kathy wants to add anything on clearing and the regulation and stuff.
I think that the question was probably targeted more around who should clear and when and how, as opposed to, opposed to the regulation of how the clearing actually happens. But I think you've spoken to both of those aspects. I think we just need to differentiate between them. On the Twin Peaks, I support and agree with Roy. I think we just need to be clear about drawing up the line between what is regulated and how, and who regulates. And what this bill responds to is the what is regulated and how. And it does so in response to the developments over recent years, as we've spoken to earlier, as well as the experiences of the FSB and where it is felt as the registrar imperative to need to tighten up on the existing law. The who regulates is an overlay to the what is regulated and how, and it's currently defined in a certain way, but we're now going through the study of maybe changing that, and that will be a lengthy process, but we don't want to hold up the whole bill on the who regulates, because there is a lot of content that would be missing in the interim. Do you want to speak about the control?
We have the same answers.
Okay, and then on the changes in control, that is referring to the market infrastructure. So we are proposing, as we were talking to earlier, around rather using, we're talking to market infrastructure rather than SROs, because market infrastructure captures also trade repositories, whereas SROs does not, so we needed a general term. And in this context, it is seen that the market infrastructure is are entities of systemic and national importance, and therefore this control or this approval is seen as necessary in order to give protection to the policy framework related to the market structure of the financial markets. This is not unprecedented. It is a similar approach as what is adopted in the banking framework for similar reasons. In addition to which, it is intended to work together with the competition law, which imposes similar requirements as well. The difference is that whereas under competition law, the competition regulator or the commission is intended to only consider, and the tribunal is intended to only consider the cost, the competition aspects of the transaction, the minister would be considering broader policy implications, competition being just one of those.
I mean, it is an outcome, I think, of, for example, the JSE is, as you know, listed on its own exchange, and so it is a piece of market infrastructure that is a company and exists and is managed. Who controls that infrastructure, or who in the end of the day has a controlling interest in it, is a very important question for us in terms of our securities regulation. And that must be done, as Cathy said, in the context of broader policy objectives. I hope we've covered all the questions, Chair. Are there additional?
Honourable Harris, I hope you are aware that it's almost lunchtime.
I'm very aware, Chair. I just have a very quick follow-up. What do you expect the actual implications would be if we delayed this until we did the Twin Peaks?
One, quite serious. Two, quite practical. Quite seriously, our banks would be faced with, I wouldn't say wouldn't be able to trade OTC derivatives, but they would be faced with incredibly uncertain environment for derivatives trading. Moreover, we wouldn't be able to, we would be thrown off course in our G20 commitments. The most extreme case is the approach taken by the EU in terms of credit ratings, is that they freeze us out. That is a very extreme sanction that other countries are able to do. A less extreme example would be that we would just not be, as I think Roland put it very well, we would not have the same rules as the other 18 players. I think one must distinguish between domestic priorities and global priorities. So the Financial Markets Board deals specifically with global priorities. Twin Peaks is a domestic priority, and so it will follow its own course. And as I said, I don't think there are going to be huge changes. Practically, from a practical perspective, we do not want to be in a situation where we are taking through what will be five or six very complex pieces of legislation which have been delayed only because of Twin Peaks. That means that the committee will have to sit through, I think, at least, I mean, we have at least four, as I highlighted, on the agenda this year, Chair, which is, I think, the most number of bills we've ever had as a Treasury and Financial Services, almost in one go, possibly a fifth, and that's just to keep up with all the G20 requirements. If we added that to all the Twin Peaks stuff, it would be an extremely onerous, I think, on not only the Treasury, but also on the committee.
Thank you very much. Honourable members and our guests, I think if we look into the process going forward, it confirms our inference in our last sitting that things are happening very rapidly within the financial market. And we agreed in our last sitting that the last thing to happen is for that process to be held ransom by Russell's legislative stores. I mean, at the least, without compromising content, we must make sure that we add value to this process. And I think this approach of workshops is going to be encouraged going forward. Maybe one or two things need to be done differently, more especially around how do we link the workshop presentation to the bill itself. There's been comparison in the two, a presentation as to what is it that's going to be corrected, or maybe what is it that is going to be changed. But we didn't zoom into the specific provision as cited in the bill. And I think that's an area that we need to improve as we prepare for these other pieces of legislation. I think that will help us a lot and simplify the problem. But I think from where I am as the chair of the session, I'm convinced that you have done quite reasonably to prepare ourselves, for the process of concluding I mean, on these particular, on these two bills, you know. So I think that the foundation is solid. We will just build on that foundation, I mean, to ensure that we expedite the process of concluding on these two bills, you know. So I think this approach of having workshops is very helpful, and we'll just have to find a way of even having some of the workshops, I mean, for the earmark bills before even a formal process starts. So as you give the broader scope within which some of these bills, I mean, must be processed, it will help the process. It's very important that you also assist us, I mean, to ensure that we take correct decisions, because really, it doesn't work well for us, I mean, for some of these laws, I mean, to be referred back for reprocessing after so much time and money wasted, I mean, in these processes, you know. So you are definitely sharing information with us is something that must be encouraged going forward. So as we do these things differently going forward. Thank you very much for the effort. I would like also to thank those who didn't have a chance to say a word. Thanks for gracing the meeting. Your presence here was really welcomed, and also our observers. Thank you very much for valuing this particular workshop. And going forward, members, the process is very clear. It's very clear, and it's captured in the presentation. But as indicated earlier on, we will make sure that tomorrow members get the response from National Treasury, and we'll start immediately to engage also with our legal team to make sure that our approach is watertight or is legally compliant. So as we are able to conclude on these bills as expected. And please don't forget to follow our Olympic team. I think Chad Letlos made us all proud this morning. Some of us were really starting to lose hope, but at least last night, immediately after his performance, I went to sleep. I wanted tranquility to observe that particular achievement. It was out of this world. So please, let's continue to follow our Olympic team and put them in our prayers. Fly safe back to your respective destination. We part to meet. Thank you very much.